Welcome to Decoding Careers, a podcast to help software engineers transition into a leadership role.
So hello everybody, welcome back to the show. I hope you're enjoying it so far. Obviously I've had some really good engineering leaders come on the show from all different types of backgrounds, different skill sets, and also different environments. So I'm hoping there's the software engineers that are listening that you're starting to take different pieces from different engineering leaders and sort of add them to your armor, because I think that's critical, you know, when you are looking to transition. And you're hearing it firsthand as well from these experienced leaders. So hoping you're enjoying it so far. But today, I'm really excited about my next guest on the show. So it's my pleasure to introduce our guest for today's episode, Vasanth Periasamy. For those that don't know Vasanth, so he's an engineering leader building software for nearly two decades now, and has had extensive experience from startups to consulting and enterprises. And he's been helping businesses build amazing products using technology. So he's currently the engineering director at OFX, and he's leading the core capabilities across the engineering team. Now, for those of you who don't know OFX, they're a global leader in cross-border payments, and they're based in Sydney. Now, they assist both individual customers and businesses in transferring payments across the globe. So thrilled to have you on our show today, Vasanth, and welcome.
Cool, pleasure to be here, Sam.
Brilliant. And you mentioned it's your first time in the studio on a podcast. I know you mentioned you've been in a few studios before. You've done quite a few podcasts remotely, and you mentioned before the show with AWS as well. So if you want to tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. At OFX, we operate heavily on cloud, so predominantly on AWS. So I get in a lot of opportunity to interact with industry experts from AWS and others. As part of that engagement, I had the privilege of sharing that learning and those stories with wider groups. I did one last year with AWS around the community that's available in AWS and the ways in which we leverage. So I'm also working with them on another interesting project that I'm going to share with them in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, nice. Well, look, the way I always like to start the show is trying to take the audience back to when you wrote your first line of code.
First line of code. I think you're sort of taking my memory 20, 24 years back. Probably my first line of code was probably in the middle of 90s. I started with BASICS, the programming language. I grew up in India, so what we do tend to do is during summer break, either we play intensive cricket, we sort of enroll in some of those extracurricular activities. And I got passionate about, learning more about computers and software at that age. So, and I started joining a couple of small community courses, if you will, and where they teach programming and software. So that's where I had my first exposure to programming and, writing few little lines of code on BASICS, and then seeing that produce the output that we want, I was like, wow, that's the thing. So formally then I moved on to learning C and C++ and so forth, but I would say writing that snippet on BASIC would be my first line of code.
And did you get hooked straight away? How did that plan out?
So I have to take a step back, because probably in the early 90s, as part of an excursion, the school I was part of, they took us to a place where we get to see computers for the first time. So the place where I grew up, computers is not a common thing or gadget that you find in people's homes. So it's sort of like, where you can see it in scientific communities or in those universities or in those exhibitions. So the first time I saw it, I was a bit thrilled, what is this gadget about? You can see, lines flashing all around. It didn't have a GUI at the time. It was just, some basic, probably at the time it was what we had. So I was curious at the time to understand, what this device do, right? How do people make use of this? So And then, after a couple of years, I get to know about this opportunity where you can go and, interact with that machine and also learn things. So that's how I started going into those community centers where you can learn programming language. And that's how it started. I got thrilled by the fact that, you know, you can instruct the machine to do something and it does it exactly what you tell them to do. So, which is kind of like a magic power, if you know what I mean. So from there, I sort of hooked on to, you know, more and more software engineering and programming and here we are.
Yeah. And your first, I'm going to say, paid job, so commercially, where did that start and how did you get that job? And do you remember what you was doing exactly?
Yeah, I can sort of split into a few parts here. The first job where I got paid was based on my own work. So probably it's early 2000, if you will. Me and my mate, who's also of a similar background, you know, he's passionate about computer. What we did, we sort of hacked around using VBScript to create a desktop application for local businesses, like a supermarket type, where it helps them to keep their inventory, like the stock list, on a system. And usually we started more of a learning experience than making money. But over the course of business, I guess, you know, we get to earn some money. I was still doing studies, by the way, so, you know, not fully out. Partly this is when Google came up with the whole AdSense, AdWords product where, you know, you can display ads and then, you know, you get money. I probably created a lot of website during that time, just hacking around Dreamweaver and so forth, writing relevant content. So some of them are targeted towards a particular segment, and then you can place ads. And then the more traffic you get, the more people engage with advertisement, then you get paid. So I received my first check just on my name from Google AdSense, probably for $80, $90. I didn't cash it, by the way. I just kept it because I was too scared, like, you know, to, because I didn't have proper, you know, tax file number, you know, back then. And I don't think I'm legally even allowed to, you know, at that age. But that was my first sort of money that I earned for my work. And then I moved into, you know, corporate career. I started with a service provider, and my first project was for a logistics company in Australia.
Yeah, nice. What's your thoughts on software engineers without a degree, like a computer science degree or qualification? What advice would you give to software engineers that are listening that are maybe thinking about becoming sort of self-taught or going to get that qualification? What's your opinion around that?
You would be surprised by my answer, because I went through university. I got a master's degree in computer science and a bachelor's. But I would say to the listeners, right, you don't necessarily need to go through university to get into coding or software engineering in 2023, right? Back then, probably it would have helped me in understanding some of those core technologies in depth, right? From fundamental software engineering, how to approach architecture, how to analyze a project, how to work on a project, more around ethics and mathematics. So it really helped me to understand the depth, but whether that helped me get a job, probably not, right? So for any of, you know, viewers who are thinking of, you know, holding off moving into software engineering because you didn't go through university, I think that's not required anymore. I happen to work with some awesome engineers, and some of my best hires are actually of people who hasn't been to university. So they're self-learners, and nowadays it's a lot easier to learn a lot of things. You know? So you can find courses online, even from, you know, renowned universities like Stanford, MIT. Like they opened up pretty much, you know, a lot of their curriculum and content. You can find it online. You can read on your own. On the other hand, like, you know, if you've been through those formal education, you definitely have gain some advantage in terms of understanding a bit more depth on a particular area, like, you know, graphics, or if you're building, you know, microcontrollers, or, you know, software for microcontrollers, or working on operating systems and so forth. But for a traditional software that you write for most of the business now, I wouldn't say, you know, that's a showstopper anymore.
Okay, interesting. And yeah, it's definitely been some transition over the years. And we've definitely helped place some of the best engineers that didn't go to university. That have been self-taught. Going back to your career, how much impact do you feel supervisors have had to your journey?
A lot. I had a privilege of working with some amazing supervisor, right? I guess without them trusting on my ability to lead and work on some amazing project, I wouldn't be here, right? So definitely, they had a major impact on my career and my career growth. I also you know, had some not so good supervisors, but managers in some part of my earlier career. But for most of the people that I work with, or part of, it's been amazing that what your manager and your supervisor can do in your career, because it all adds up, right? Like, you know, when you have a good leader, they can pretty much fast track your career, right? What you can achieve in 10 years, you can achieve in 5 years. And finding companies and places where you can work with those supervisors, I think it really helps, you know, in a long way. I'm fortunate to work with some of them in my early career. So that means I can, you know, I pretty much got short on some of those roadblocks that others might typically face because of, you know, not working with, you know, those type of supervisors.
And what does a bad supervisor look like?
I will say what the good ones look like, and probably, you know, you can figure out, right, what, you know, good supervisors and leaders always have your back, right? They know where the business is heading, where the industry is heading, and they can connect the dots between what you want as an individual versus what the business want, and then help you get there or get the business there, and along the way you can also grow. The good supervisors are always available when you need them, and this is what I try to coach my direct reports as well. You know, it's not about you anymore, right? It's a team. It's about the partnership. It's about that mentorship. I think that's what supervisor or leader bring into the mix. The success of the team is the success of your success, basically. So good supervisor, good leader sees that way and then helps people achieve those goals. Typically, the not so good ones tend to be a little bit self-centered. You know, it's just and they haven't taken the people aspect of what it means to be a supervisor. I find those people usually are more transactional than, you know, a leader.
Yeah, no, interesting. Okay, so I think what would be an interesting topic to jump into here, so say, for instance, you're a senior engineer, you've worked your way up through the business, maybe in different environments. How do you know when you're ready to step up into that leadership role? Is there certain signs that you should look for? Are you waiting for someone to tell you you're going to be a leader? Probably take us back to the stage where you was at that point where you was a senior engineer and then you had to make that transition. Maybe talk a bit about what that looked like, and if you've got any advice on sort of signs to look for, or when you should be ready.
Definitely. So this is probably around 2010-11. I was working for a service provider in Melbourne. We were helping, we were building software for, you know, small, medium business. And the founder at the time, they had an idea of, you know, launching a social media campaign product. And I was a senior engineer at the time, an individual contributor, right? I was doing really well from providing solutions for various clients. But when they pitched this idea among the group, like, hey, folks, this is what we are thinking of building. They're also new to startup world. Like, they used to be in the service industry, not build a product, you know, on their own. So this is the first time they sort of thought about, you know, pivoting more from a service industry to a service business into a product business. I guess, you know, as an engineer, a senior engineer, my advice would be to, when that opportunity arises, just grab them, right? Even you can ask, you know, veteran leaders who are in the industry for 30, 40 years, they are learning every day, right? Like, it's, you know, learning doesn't stop, and they don't have answers for everything. I don't have answers for everything. But when the opportunity arises, I'll just put up, like, looks like this is something that, you know, I can contribute, I can lead. I'm interested in web engineering and computer engineering in general, and this sounds something that, you know, I can add a lot of value into it. And this comes back to having a good supervisor, right? My manager at the time, I'm like, okay, seems, you know, you're interested. We'll trial it out. We'll form a team, 3 engineers, 4 engineers, with including the front end, come back with a proposal, like how you would build if it was your company, right? That's how it started, right? So you have to look for opportunities, right? And don't wait whether you have ticked all the boxes, right? That will never be the case, because things change, you learn new things, industry, you know, changes. Cloud was just emerging at the time. Now everything's built on cloud. Now we're talking about, you know, generative AI. And so when you're looking to move into leadership, don't look specifically for technology, right? Think a bit broader around the people aspect, the business aspect. So at the end of the day, we are there as a as an individual to help the business grow, whatever industry it is, and look for the signs of what business wants, right? You're already a senior person because of your skill set, and if you can connect that with how you can help those skill set for the business to grow, and also always keep in mind that the people comes first. So if you connect those dots, I think, you know, you're ready to become a leader, right? I think it's a start, it's a journey, and once you see enough of it, you can establish your own characteristics of what type of leader you are, and then help others along those journey.
That's a really, really interesting few points there. What if there is a senior software engineer that didn't really want to manage people or lead people, but wanted to progress his career or her career?
This is an emerging pathway in Australia where you can be a leader and still be an individual contributor to a certain extent. In saying that, I would say, right, it's inevitable leaders can't deliver output on their own, right? It's an outcome of a function, outcome of the team. It's not about you or me or the individual. So even if you don't want to lead people or manage people, I guess, but you still have to lead the outcome. You know, you might be leading a major project as an architect, right? You are leading, you are setting the scene for others, right? How things should be built, right? And more and more in Australia, we sort of putting together a career framework, even at VFX where I work now. We have a career pathway that allows leaders to grow without them managing people. So there's an emerging role at the moment, pretty much in most of the companies now, where your career progression doesn't stop at software engineer. You can grow into staff role, principal engineer, and, you know, and so forth. And parallelly, you know, companies are still have that, you know, management leader around engineering manager and director and so forth. Yeah. So my advice to the listeners is you can be a leader without managing people. It's about outcome of the group. And typically, you know, we expect leaders to also manage people. I think that's, but there is also avenue for you to influence individuals without directly managing them.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that will be a sigh of relief for a few engineers listening, I'm sure, because not everyone wants to manage people, and it's a completely different skill.
It's totally different, right?
You've got to be passionate, I think.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, when you look between these pathways, they are complementary and to a certain extent, and they are quite different in other aspects. So you have to pick, right? Really, you know, you have to think carefully on what you want, what motivates you as an engineer or as an individual, and then, you know, choose accordingly. I would also say, you know, it's okay to try, right? If, wherever you're working, you know, similar to what happened to me, you know, 10, 12 years ago, I put my hand up, my supervisor trusted me to give it a try, and then it sort of all worked out. So there's no harm in trying it out, you know, in a safe space. I think as a leader, it's important to give those aspiring individuals those space, right? Either as an individual contributor or if they want to try management, and then guide them, coach them, and eventually they'll figure it out where they want to go. And as a leader, you can also guide them, right? Okay, you seems more about, you know, helping people and all of this. So probably this is something, you know, you should explore a bit further and give them, you know, more opportunities. In other cases, you know, I've seen individuals where they would like to put their hand up to lead people, but purely from a title or monetary perspective. Yeah. And probably that's not the way you should approach, because this is a completely different roles and responsibilities. So, and more and more, what's happening in the industry is the remuneration. As a director, I could see the remuneration of all those people in my team. And I can, based on my experience in the last few years, seeing those roles, I would say, you know, the remuneration is similar. If you're listening and then if you're thinking of moving into management solely for monetary benefit, probably reconsider that, because, you know, the difference is not that much.
And it always ends in tears.
See, for some, it worked really well.
Yeah. That's more of a bonus, though, that comes with it. It's an add-on rather than being the main.
Yes, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Also, you know, some individual really, really like working with people, seeing them grow and coach and motivate. And for those, the engineering management is a good pathway for you to consider. And I've seen one engineer in my team who was a principal engineer before, and he made the choice and he put up his hand like, I want to manage a team. Like, okay, I trust what you've done as a principal engineer, individual contributor, and provided him with opportunity. And probably I can say now, you know, he's doing really, really well in the team. So you can always, you know, explore and try. But just keep in mind, they are two different tracks altogether, and it comes with, you know, different aspects. You have to approach it completely differently.
Okay, interesting. And what about if there's a leader above you that's holding you back? Mm-hmm. How would you deal with that? Like, when I say holding you back, say if you've got a senior software engineer that knows and you're trying to make that transition, but the person above you is seeing you as a bit of a threat, how would you sort of deal with that situation?
Two answers, short and long. Short one, I would say, look elsewhere. Because you want to work with leaders who celebrate your victories, right? Who encourages, you know, what you're doing, who continuously invest their time to help you grow, and in that way grow the business. If they see you as a threat or something, then that's not a dynamics that you want to be part of, right? I've seen engineers in my early career where they had that aspiration, they had what's required to become a leader, but the immediate supervisor, you know, didn't pick that up, and then and in some cases, you know, they didn't help much. So in that case, you know, look elsewhere. It's a big industry, it's a big market. While things, you know, change and all of this, but definitely, you know, things elsewhere where your contribution is valued, and then, you know, opportunities are being provided. I'm fortunate enough to work on some of the amazing companies where I grew to various level. Also, I get to, you know, elevate people. Senior engineers, you know, I got them promoted to, you know, principal or engineering manager. So find those companies. Again, it's not that easy. The other way to look at it is, find out from the supervisor, you know, what you're missing, right? Probably they really want to help you, right? But probably you're missing, you know, those one or two little things, right? Put that out, right? Make it visible. Have a conversation. I would say have a regular conversation with your manager or supervisor. To tell them, like, you know, I really want to be XYZ in 1 year, 2 years. Once you share, like, 99% of the leaders want you to succeed. So they will work with you. They will help you with a plan on how you can get there. Then it's a matter of, you know, you following those processes and then ticking those boxes, and, you know, it can easily get there.
Interesting. It's an interesting concept there. If you had your time again, what would you do differently? And every time I ask this question, a lot of the engineering leaders say, I wouldn't do anything differently because them mistakes made me who I am today. But is there anything that you would change or wish you would have done to make yourself an even better leader now? Or
I'm fortunate enough to work on various industries and shape and form, so startup, enterprise. I've seen on the other side, like being a consultant, in going and working for an enterprise, and also on the other side where you get to manage consultant and so forth. But in if I were to give one thing, I would say I might have explored working in other region probably a bit more. So I worked in India, I worked in Australia, but I could have explored other areas. Probably in the future I will, but you know, that gives you a different flavor of, you know, what others are doing, right? It's more about appreciating, you know, different culture, the way things are done, the way innovation happens, and the way capital flows. So you get to explore a lot of those when you work on different region. But now I'm fortunate to work in a company which is global. We have offices in North America, you know, Asia Pacific and Europe and so forth. So, and get have teams, you know, located all around the globe. But if I could have done this much earlier.
Yeah. And what's next in your career? You mentioned there that obviously you're at OFX at the minute. Have you got any sort of plans for the future?
We acquired a company recently called Patron. They're a startup based in Sydney. You should check it out. It's really, really interesting what they got there. So all I'm thinking at the moment is like how we can leverage what they've built, combining with, you know, what we have at OFX and taking it to the next level. I've been through some of this M&A in the past, so far not on the receiving end, but this would be something that, you know, I look forward to, you know, the ways in which we can integrate and leverage the platform and then combine forces. So, my immediate focus is on getting that job done.
Yeah, nice. That's exciting, the new acquisition there. Brilliant, Ross. I really appreciate you coming on the show. I'm sure the engineers and anyone listens has enjoyed that. And yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, good to be here, Sam, and thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Decoding Careers with Sam Yates. This podcast is proudly brought to you with the support of recruitment agency Discovered People. To find out more, go to discoveredpeople.com.au.